Good morning, brethren.
Good morning. Good morning.
Glad to see all of you here. Before I start what I'm supposed to do, I want to make two or three comments. First to Joe and Don, thank you for all you have done here. Probably didn't do very good judgment in selecting some of the speakers, but other than that, you've done well, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Secondly, some of you people have been referred to for 2 days now as young people. Go back home, and now that you're getting into the late 30s and 40s, people won't recognize you as young anymore, so enjoy these 2 or 3 days. I really appreciate you being here and appreciate what you're doing, and have attended services in the Northeast, but have never lived in the Northeast. Don't really have, don't be insulted by this, but don't really have any aspiration to live in the Northeast. Somebody asked me yesterday how long I was going to stay in Bowling Green, and I said, well, we have a cemetery plot, so I think it's going to be permanent. But I have been, I have gotten so much more out of this than you all have, and I appreciate your interest and your concern. I am so pleased to have an opportunity to be with the other presenters. I met Brother Patty about 2 or 3 months ago. He was at our congregation. He is bringing his wife back for a reunion, one of our members. And Holly Caldwell and I have known one another several years. We've had a lot of association together, and I do appreciate him so much. And Brother Sewell, I've known a long time. And so just the opportunity to be with them, and the opportunity to be here and see what's going on here and how much concern there is for doing the will of God is just something I'm going to take with me for a long time. And I thank you for that. Today I'm going to talk about challenges that elders face. And as I got to, after I was here yesterday and I saw who's here and sort of how you all are, I thought, you know, what I plan to do on Tuesday doesn't fit in very well. This will be a futuristic lesson for you, because some of you will continue to preach. Some of you may be preachers and elders. Some of you may be elders and shepherds and not preaching anymore. But even if you're not in those roles, as a preacher, I think it will help you to understand some of the things that elders deal with. And not that I have the full answer on that. In fact, when I was trying to decide what to do for these two lessons, I decided, well, I'm going to do one on challenges that elders face. And when I started making a list, I got up to about 20-something, and I thought, well, I can't do that many in 45 minutes. So you'll be pleased to know I'm down to about 10, I think. With that, let me say it's sort of an introduction to it. And to begin by saying that serving as a shepherd may require long-term commitment of time, of energy, and giving of yourself. And in that regard, a familiar passage out of Acts chapter 20, you all be familiar with that, but if you want to turn there, it's Acts chapter 20, beginning in verse 28. You remember the setting for that's when Paul was traveling, and he asked the elders at Ephesus to meet him at Miletus. And here he said to them in verse 28 of chapter 20, he talked to them about some other things, and he says, therefore, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God which he purchased with his blood. For I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also from among yourselves men will rise up, speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them. And people who have served as elders, people who have been preachers, recognize the validity of that, and also that those sorts of things didn't just occur in Ephesus, they occur in other places, including in 2021. A diligent and faithful shepherd or elder will experience stresses unlike the secular world. And let me, at the expense of appearing immodest, I worked at a university, Western Kentucky University, for 32 years. I taught for 10 years, and then for 22 years I've worked in administration. And for the last, and this is the immodest part, I apologize for it, for the last 5 or 6 years, I had a heavy load. I was executive vice president and had a heavy load, and this relates to Eldring family. And, you know, I dealt with personnel, and I dealt with finances, and I dealt with all those things. In fact, as Tim took us on the tour, there you are, Tim. As Tim took us on the tour of these facilities yesterday, and Colleen was there part of the time, and he and I were saying, oh man, the maintenance of this is something, because, you know, we've lived that life. I dealt with some pretty heavy duty kinds of things. I also had responsibility for relating with the legislature. But now my point about all this is that is secular work. And when I would go home at night, I hardly ever stayed awake thinking about those things. One of the things I would say to President Scholar that I reported to, we'd be dealing with a real authority issue, and I'd say, now I'm going to go home and sleep tonight because I know you're going to stay awake thinking about this. My point about all this is, in secular work, you deal with sometimes with heavy duty kinds of things. There is nothing, though, to compare that with the things you deal with as an elder, because you're dealing with people's souls. Those are the kinds of things that keep you awake. And I would tell you, like a lot of other elders, sometimes I have awakened in the middle of the night and thought about, you know, somebody whose the marriage is not going well, or, you know, somebody who's about to leave the Lord. Those are the sorts of things that keep you awake. The secular work is impactful, it wears you out, but it does not deal with people's souls. So that's my way of saying, this is serious business, guys. And there is no way to get around that because you agreed to do this. In some ways, not totally, but in some ways, it reminds me of a passage in Numbers. I had a senior moment, Patty. In Numbers 14 and verse 5, that's what's going on there is the children of Israel were ready to go into the promised land. And if you remember, they decided, we need to go back to Egypt. We need to select a new leader and go back to Egypt. Well, in verse 5, here's what Aaron and Moses did. They fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. Now, I don't know all the impact of that. Some of that, I think, has to do with their relationship with God. But also, it's a weariness. Now, the magnitude of what they were dealing with was not maybe as the magnitude of being an elder, but it's, I think, a similar kind of thing. So, with that kind of introduction, let me talk to you about some of the challenges then that I see that the elders deal with. And some of these will kind of hark back a little bit to things we talked about yesterday. And somebody had talked to one of the, maybe Kali, I'm not sure, we talked a little bit about balancing responsibilities. So a shepherd has to be concerned about the flock. Shepherd has to be concerned about his family. Oh, and incidentally, shepherds, the husband, that's a male husband. In case you hadn't caught that, you all won't get that, do you?
Got it.
You got it?
Got it.
In our society, not all husbands are males. So these are male husbands. That's, forget that. I was thinking about that the other day. I met someone and she said to me, I want you to meet my wife. And I thought, okay. It wasn't in a setting, it was in a hospital and someone was very sick. And I thought, you know, as much as I want to discuss this, I'm going to pass on this right now. I don't know whether I missed a good opportunity or not. But anyway, one of the things that elders have to do is balance their responsibility between family, between the sheep, and between their responsibility to God. So this deals in somewhat with time management. And one of the things that I experienced personally about this, some of the members would sometimes say to me while I was still working, I know you're busy, but I need to see you. And that would kind of hit me right there, because I think, you know, if they need to see me, I need to be available. The best I could do on that, I would tell, and guys, this was before cell phones now. I've been retired 29 years, so, you know, the world's changed a lot. But I would, they would call the, I would say, you know, call the office, and they would call the office, and I said, always tell my secretary that we go to church together. And then I would tell my secretary, you let me know as quickly as you can if somebody calls. So I did try to develop some linkage there to try to overcome some of that. What's the answer about balancing responsibilities? Well, there's no magic answer to that. Do the best you can with that. And several of these challenges, I'm not going to tell you the answer because I don't know the answer to them. But I'm going to identify them, and then you can think about them the rest of your life. And in thinking about that, there are some types of work that, I'm talking about secular work now, there are some types of work that are much more conducive to an elder getting away and if people need to see him. Like if somebody owns a business, usually they're a little more flexible and they can get away a little more than somebody else. I think people who I know, and I wasn't with the elders with them, but a long time ago we had two elders who were in sales. Now, one of them traveled, and he might leave home on Monday and didn't get back until about Thursday or Friday. And I always thought, well, what if somebody needs you during that period of time? One of the other salespeople worked there in town, and he could kind of get away. So some, I'm not suggesting that elders should have certain occupations. There are some occupations elders shouldn't have, but nevertheless, some occupations make it easier for you to relate, to get to the people. Now, so the answer to this, somebody said, well, you need to give priority to what God wants you to do. Well, God says to an elder, feed the flock, take care of your family, and take care of the spiritual family. So those are all priorities. And it's up to you to manage your time and see how you're going to deal with things. So all I'm doing today is identifying those solutions. A second impact that I would mention, or a second challenge as far as the elders are concerned, is the impact that it has on a family. And this may be many and varied. It can be a very positive thing for the family if the family sees and understands that the value of the work that a husband and a father is doing, and particularly when they see fruits of that, because it takes time away from family and from it takes energy and time away from family. And then sometimes a family impact. Some church members simply do not look at the elders in his family the way they should. You know, they expect that elders' wives and elders' children should be better than everybody else. Now, I think everybody should be good, so if you could bring everybody to that certain level, that would be the case. You know, elders' families are in the limelight a little more than some other people. So that's a thing that elders are challenged with. A third thing is, and this one I think is a thing that it was is also shared with preachers, and that is the how do you deal with disappointment that comes when members of the group make choices that are disappointing? You can say that another way: when members see sin, they're not doing what they need to do. You know, that's a disappointment. That reminds me a little bit, even though it's a different context, of Galatians 1:6, you know, where Paul wrote to them and said he marveled that they had so soon moved to another gospel. That's a little different principle, but I think it's the case. And you see, you know, that people get mixed up in marriages sometimes, sometimes with parenting, with all kinds of things that are distressing. And elders get an opportunity to work on that. I was telling Kelly the other day, as I've been preparing for these things, it has caused all of these things that I've dealt with over 45 years to sort of be refreshed in my mind, some that I thought I had repressed forever. And I've thought about a lot of things that as elders we dealt with, And in thinking about it, I thought about three couples in particular who are still members of the altar of the Church of Christ that some of us spent hours and hours and hours with them regarding marriage issues. Those three couples are all still together, doing fairly well. There are not a lot of just perfect marriages. There are a lot of good marriages. I'm not sure how many. Well, I guess all of you have perfect marriages. You all cater to your wives and do what you should in that regard. You know, even though we had those successes, there are so many times when things did not work out well. That's just one of the things that an elder has to learn to deal with. And I think the solution to some of that is just to teach and to encourage. And especially, as I talked about yesterday, know the congregation and stay in contact with them. Now, you can't always resolve the issues, but you can always be available and always be working on it. Another one, and I talked a little bit about this yesterday, how do you feed yourself and the shepherd and feed the flock as well? A lot of that is a time factor. If you are a shepherd, regardless of the size of the congregation, you're going to be spending a good bit of time with that. And feeding the sheep, as we read yesterday in Titus, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able to, by sound doctrine, both to exhort and convict those who contradict. And the passage that I think most about that is Ezekiel 34. And I know Ezekiel 34 is, Brother Sewell, that's in the Old Testament, since you had that discussion. But Ezekiel 34 is addressed to the elders in Israel, and it is a pretty impactful passage. In fact, I still remember a man that we were dealing with who was sort of difficult to deal with. And he sent me a letter one day and said, you need to be reading Ezekiel 34, because we had not dealt with him the way he wanted us to deal with him, but we dealt with him the way he felt he needed to be dealt with. So the point about this is a challenge. How are you going to do all these things? You know, the metaphor we use is, how are you going to keep all these balls in the air at the same time? And they're all important balls, you know, feeding yourself, feeding the flock, feeding your family. And you just need to do all that. Another one I would mention, when the preacher is not an elder, getting the church, and this is you all can identify quickly now, when the preacher is not an elder, getting the church to understand and accept the respective roles of the preacher and the elders. Members can sometimes go to the preacher before they go to the elders. That's kind of natural. You're before the congregation more than the elders. But there needs to be a clear understanding about the respective roles and how they would deal with one another. As I talked yesterday about the preacher-elder relationship, it needs to be same focus, same objectives, and hopefully that works out well. Another challenge is dealing with the numerical changes in the membership. In other words, the membership increases, the membership declines. Tim said this morning that you all, the church here, had a big family to leave and cut your numbers down. When you have new people come in, particularly, and Bowling Green right now is kind of a vibrant place from an economic standpoint, and we're having a lot of in-migration into Bowling Green. And as a result, there are people who are moving in and who are Christians, and they've got four or five choices, and each of the congregation gets some of those people. In fact, this year we've had, when I say several, I'd have to stop and count, we've had certainly more than five or six families to move in. And that's good, but you know, you have to integrate them, and they need to get acquainted and to know, and usually most families have some unique things. So elders, I see that as elders' primary responsibility, and to help people grow Just one interesting side story. In the late 1990s, we were at 12th Street, and our building on Sunday was literally full. So the elders talked with the deacons and others and the members and decided that we needed to relocate. And the elders then divided up the congregation, and we called every family, not every individual, every family, said, "Do you want to try to reconstruct this building or want to move?" So about two-thirds thought we should move, and that's what we did. But one woman who didn't really surprise me came to me one day, and she said, "Well, I'll tell you the solution to this." And I said, "Well, what is it?" She said, "We just don't want to let anybody else be members." And I said, "Well, what about if we baptize somebody?" She said, "We should do that, and then I have to go somewhere else." There's a lot of clarity of where you should be spiritual. But anyway, not to belabor that one anymore. I talked to her about that, but and she's still with us. That's just another challenge. If the numbers decline, there are challenges. Then I want to talk about, for the rest of this time, several challenges that I've called internal to the group of elders and shepherds. The first one of those is selecting additional shepherds. In 1 Timothy 3:1, it says, "If a man desires the role of bishop, it's a good thing." The scriptures, as I said yesterday, unless you all know some, I don't know, you probably do, the scriptures don't tell us the process to be used in selecting shepherds or elders. So it's sort of up to the congregation. But on the matter of desiring, we had an experience that was, I think, a little bit unusual. And I reminded Brother Sewell that I read sometime something, I guess it was an article in Christianity Magazine, where you wrote about desire to be an elder. And somebody might say, "Well, that is a good thing." My answer to that is yes and no. It's a good thing if the person who wants to be an elder wants to serve, who wants to do good works, a person who wants to visit the sick, a person who wants to study. As I said to Brother Manis this morning, we were talking about something. I think that's who I said this to. Anyway, I think on the matter of elders being selected, elders should kind of bubble up. And what I mean by that, people in the congregation should kind of bubble up. You'll see what they do. You'll see the kind of work they do. And I've heard people say, well, that guy, he'd be a good elder. Well, that's because he's doing things. And again, as I said yesterday, most of what elders do, you should be doing. There are a few things that are unique, but for the most part, the work of an elder is the work of a Christian. But anyway, I think desiring that is a good thing if you want to be an elder for some of those reasons. It's not a good thing, in my opinion, if you want to do that because of the authority, and I'm coming back to authority a little later on. If it's because you want to be involved in the decisions that are made, if you want to be involved because the elders are before the congregation, if you desire that because you want to be more prominent in the congregation, then you shouldn't be an elder. And I will tell you an experience we had, and we were not in the process of trying to add more elders, and this has been many years ago. We had a man in the congregation who was campaigning. And the thing that made it difficult, he had gone to what I thought was one of the more godly women congregation, and had persuaded her, and she really was a fine woman. He had been in a medical field, and he had convinced her she needed a mammogram, and she went to get a mammogram, and she had breast cancer. So she said, "He saved my life." So as a result of that, he talked with her and other people about he needed to be an elder there. He had some agenda. He just started campaigning. So those of us who were elders at the time told him we needed to meet. And we sat down and talked with him, and we said, "That's not our understanding of desiring and what it means to desire to be an elder." And we talked through that, and the short answer is that he's no longer with us because he and his wife thought he'd get treated fairly and he left. Now, by an opposite standpoint, a friend of mine who died recently had been an elder in a congregation about an hour away and been there a long, long time and served well, I think. And then he moved to Bowling Green, and he became an elder at Lost River. And he was an elder there a year or two, and then he moved again. So he was then in a small rural congregation. He called me one day, and he said, "I need your advice." He said, "They want me to be an elder, and I don't want to be an elder." He said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, I think that's pretty easy." I said, "If you read about desiring the office, you don't desire it, you shouldn't be an elder." And he said, "Good, that's what I wanted to do." And then, thank you. And then he died and is no more. Then another challenge, and brothers, this is a challenge. And that is, how do you deal with elders, an elder, that some people in the congregation think the person is no longer qualified? And that's a reality that some of us have dealt with. Biblically, it would seem to me that's easy to deal with. There are a lot of things that biblically are easy to deal with if you can get everybody to follow the biblical provisions. It's when people have their own views about it. But just think for a moment. The people who should be able to communicate most candidly and most frankly and most earnestly and most low-key wise should be a group of elders. You have the same cause. So you would think that if an elder is no longer qualified and somebody came to that person and said, "We don't think you're qualified anymore," what would the person do? Well, the person would say, "Thank you, and I'll resign." Well, it doesn't always work out that smoothly. Sometimes ego gets involved in these things. So a couple of cases that we dealt with, some members thought these were not at the same time, but the same situation, thought that two men who still had children living at home, who were somewhat ungodly at that point in life, they'd been baptized, that the elder was not ruling his house as he should. So now, the people who thought that did not go to those elders. That should have been the first step. I mean, did not go out to the elders that were in question. So guess where that ended up? It ended up with the elders. And we sat down, again, these are not concurrent, and talked with them. And one man just said, "Well, I didn't know that was going on. I'll just resign," which he did. The other man said, "Well, she's not all that bad," and this sort of thing. Those are relative things, right? No, it's either good or bad. He was not inclined to step down, but after a good bit of persuasion or a good bit of discussion about it, then he stepped down. Those kinds of things, brothers, can lead to a lot of division if they're not handled prudently and carefully and with love and concern, because there are other people in the congregation who probably think they should stay on together. So this is a biggie as far as things that are difficult to deal with. Those two men did step down. One is now deceased, and the other one is still a very functioning member at the congregation. So sometimes they work out better than you think they would. Closely related to that is one that, and I have to be really careful about this one, particularly since this is recorded. Well, I wasn't going to list in names anyway. And this one, the point of this one for you all who are future elders or whatever, is you have to be prepared for everything. Now, as preachers, you experience some of the same sort of thing. Five elders. One man had been an elder a long time. Two men had been elders less than a year. So that's three of the five. One of the other two came to the elders and said, my wife's been unfaithful and I'm going to divorce her. Now, to complicate that, his wife was the daughter of one of the other elders. So you've got a person who's the wife of one, the daughter of the other, and the wife was not sure that her husband was being fair. It was a he said, she said kind of situation. So that did not end well. My only point for making it here is elders have to, and the men here who are elders, you cannot anticipate all the things that are going to happen. They are just myriad sometimes. And like secular work, it looks like sometimes if you have one problem, there's another problem coming right down the road. You get a lot of these at the same time. Again, the point is, you just have to be prepared. And of course, preachers get involved in this too, because sometimes these people come to the preachers before they will come to somebody else. So the solution to that and a lot of other things, in my opinion, is to stick to the Word of God, have the determination to decide what is correct, what is true, what is scriptural, and act accordingly. Now, you can read that kind of statement and say, amen, that's exactly what we need to do. But implementing that sometimes is not as easy as that. Then, next to my last one. Two more after this. Let's see, Joe. Let's see how much time I got.
14 minutes.
14 minutes. I can do it. Just the challenge of men working together, and especially as a group of elders. And as it gets larger, the most elders I've ever been a part of was 10. Well, the basic issue you have is trying to find the time that all 10 can meet. But beyond that, you know, the more people you have, the more differences you have in nature and that sort of thing. But hopefully, as Christians, you may have different personalities, but you have the same objective, and you're trying to do the same sort of things. But questions come up like, how are we going to divide up the work? And one of the things we've done for many years is have the congregation into groups. But that's more for acquaintance and that sort of thing, and we change it every year or two. So that's just an issue. And I guess I would say, and I'm going to make a confession on this, elders, shepherds, need to stay away from administrative chores as much as possible. And I would tell you, this is my confession. When I retired, I had a lot of time that I hadn't had prior to that. And if I saw things that needed to be done and didn't get done, sometimes I'd just go do them because I had time. And that was not a good idea because there were people who should have been doing those things and been assigned those things. So elders need to stay away from administrative things, and I didn't always do that. Part of it was my nature, and part of it was just because I didn't do what I should have done. How elders work together, particularly if you have a large congregation and you have several elders. Then a quickie here. This is true whether you're an elder or not. Deal with the most difficult issues as quickly as possible. And you need to do that in your everyday life. I'll tell you again an example from work. I worked before cell phones, and we didn't have laptops till about the time I retired, or what have you. So I'd come to the office, and my secretary would have a list of phone calls that I need to return. Well, almost always, I would look at that list, and in general, you would know who had a girl with their saddle or whatever the issue was. I would always try to do the most difficult calls first. Now, the principle out of that is you need to get the anxiety out of the way as quickly as possible. And that's true in dealing with people, not just phone calls. There's a temptation to deal with the easy ones first and then build up the more difficult ones. I think you do it the other way around. My last point before I do a summary is to me the most burning of these. How you carry out responsibilities as an elder You make the choices, make the decisions without overemphasizing authority. I have heard elders say to people in judgmental matters, you do this because I'm an elder. Please don't do that. And I used to say this to the children, yeah, you're going to do this because I'm the father. That's not as bad, I don't think, as saying that as an elder. Shepherds lead sheep more than they drive sheep. Mm-hmm. And that's particularly true in the biblical text. Remember, eldering is a function, not an office. As a matter of fact, I don't even like the word eldership, and I'll tell you why. To me, that word connotes something like kingship. It's just a ship. And again, that's no biggie, but I don't. When I sometimes hear people say, well, the eldership said, well, good. How authority is exercised. Yes, sometimes the elders have to make very strong statements about things. Maybe sometimes about people with whom there is an issue that needs to be addressed. Shepherds, elders are not about power. And so much in our culture, when we think about leadership, we think about, power. Going back to desiring the office of a bishop, that's what some people, in my opinion, the man I referred to earlier who was campaigning, he wanted power. Power doesn't reside with the elders. Power resides with God. And then how we deal with that is tricky sometimes, because ultimately the last call belongs to the elders. Elders, as I said yesterday, are not legislators. They don't make rules. Now, again, elders can decide things as far as what's going to happen in the congregation. I think maybe that's what Peter had in mind in 1 Peter 5:3 when he says you don't lord it over them. Or one translation says the master over them. And contrary to a popular view regarding leadership, shepherds are to be humble. Somehow in our culture, we view humility as a weakness. And humility is a great strength. And you can be forceful. You can be carrying out your responsibilities as an elder in a very humble kind of way. Remember in Matthew 5:5, blessed are the meek. And I won't go there, but sometimes look in Matthew 2:4-7, where it says, look at the interest of others. And then I guess I would say, trust is earned and not demanded. And I think most of all, there are times when elders simply need to confess to the congregation. I don't mean that I've committed adultery. Well, they should if they did that. But, sometimes elders don't handle things the best way, or at least that would be true in my case and some others too. So I think it's healthy for the individual and the congregation if the elder would say to the congregation, either collectively or individually, depending on how, I didn't do that one well. I didn't handle that very well, because that's a humble thing to do. There are many other challenges, but I'm going to quit with that, and I don't want to conclude with this comment. Since there are so many challenges and so many difficulties in functioning as a shepherd or an elder and overseer, why accept such a responsibility? Why be an elder? Life would be easier without it in some ways. Your family might be more comfortable without it. So why do that? Well, I'm just going to list 5 things and then quit. Number 1, 1 Peter 5:4. He's been talking about, he's been admonishing the elders. In verse 4, when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of joy that does not fade away. That's a pretty good reward. Number two, God gives gifts to people. Just think about it. When they built the tabernacle, you remember he gave people ability to do all those intricate kinds of things that were going to the tabernacle. And as we read yesterday from Ephesians chapter 4, there are gifts there that are mentioned. So, the premise in this now is God gives gifts. If a person has the capabilities to serve, and fellow Christians want the person to serve, how can the person refuse to serve? Number three, and whoever asked the question you asked last night about the weakness and that sort of thing, and I suggested reading Luke 17:10. Okay, accept and understand that an individual will not be perfect. Luke 17:10, Christ had been talking about faith and duty. So likewise, you, when you have done all these things that's referenced to the previous verses, which you are commanded, saying, we are unprofitable servants. We have done what was our duty to do. So anyone who approaches being an elder to think, I've got this covered, I've got this, I can handle this. Just remember, at your very best, you're not going to be perfect. Number four, the opportunity to be a part of the growth and development of boys and girls who become godly men and women is a great reward. I would tell you that sometimes when we're assembled and I look around the assembly, and there are people there that I knew before they were born and have known them all these years, and they are now family people. Maybe they're deacons, maybe they're an elder, they're Bible class teachers, they're trying to live right. Not that I take any credit for it, but just being a part of a situation that results in that kind of growth in people is a great encouragement, mm-hmm. and their encouragement to other people. Number five, this is why you would be an elder if conditions are right. You set an example to your family and to others with an opportunity to magnify Christ and not magnify yourself. Mm-hmm. To magnify Christ and not magnify yourself. As I said yesterday, sometimes members make it difficult in that regard. I told you the story about the guy came to me and said, don't you have a big head because you're an elder? You have to remind people that you're just who you are. And my concluding sentence to you, and this is all, in our culture, values are vanishing, social norms are being watered down, and families are deteriorating. Now, I'm not leaving on a negative note, but we have a hope. And the hope is in Jesus Christ. So tell them about it, preachers. And thank you all for your attention. And this has made my week, just been here with you. Kelly and I are going to have to leave after Brother Sewell's lecture, and I'm sorry about that, but tell you right now, goodbye.
Right, so we'll take about a 7-minute break, and then we'll have our question and answer session. And we encourage, it looks like kind of that way already.